Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. This is our official season preview episode, at least the first half of this episode will be. The second half, we'll take a peek at this Saturday's game against East Carolina for the Wolverines. If you missed our position preview series, definitely go check that out. They'll probably still be relevant next week, but you'll sound really smart around your friends at the tailgate if you go and listen to the 5 to 6 hours of podcasting that we did, breaking down all 11 position groups in great detail, the strengths, the question marks. We got everything. We even have our predictions for each position group. So be sure to check that out. This one, yeah, we're going big picture again. We're talking about the team. We'll do a lightning round of some of the predictions that we have for this season. In the second half of the episode, we'll talk maybe not the nitty gritty that that you'll see in Big Ten play in terms of like the positional and strategic things to watch, but what we want to see from the offense this weekend for the Wolverines, what we want to see from the Wolverines defense this weekend, couple players we're watching, and we'll have our score prediction at the end. But Steve, getting to this season, I believe that we both picked Michigan to go 12-0 this year. It's my first time doing 12-0. I don't remember what you had last year. But
I don't think I had 12-0.
Yeah, this is kind of different territory for me because there's so many games where I could envision a loss, but I've seen enough from the current returning Michigan players. I've seen enough from the transfer portal players they brought in. I really do think that they are the better team than anyone on their schedule this year. And I do think the schedule lines up in a way that they have time, if they have question marks, if they have vulnerabilities in certain spots, they have time to sort those out before they necessarily have to be thrown into the fire. But with that 12-0, I don't think you or I think that it'll be that they'll win by 30 points every week. There will be trap games. There will be tough opponents, tough venues, games that Michigan might find itself in a dogfight. And honestly, last season, how many games at halftime were a one possession game for the Wolverines? I mean, that kind of became their thing, is it would be like 10-7 or 13-6 at halftime, and then they start to pull away. So there's lots of potential trap games. I actually would argue there's more this year just because there's more what I would consider to be quote unquote tough road venues: Michigan State, Nebraska, Minnesota, Penn State. All jump out to me as games where the crowd will be bumping, right? The crowd will be full. It'll be tough. So, Steve, maybe it's one of those four. Maybe it's a different game because of an opponent matchup or timing in the schedule. What is your biggest trap game for the Wolverines this season?
Almost kind of wish we were recording tomorrow, because don't Nebraska and Minnesota play each other tonight?
Yeah, I think those are two very strong contenders for this.
Because those are the two I look at. Michigan State, too much of a rival to call a trap game. That might be a tough game, no matter what Michigan State turns out to be this year, just because, I mean, granted, the better team, the more talent, the better team usually has won that game historically over the last 12, 15 years. But it's just enough of a rivalry. I don't really think it falls into the trap game deal. I'll say Minnesota just because it's Rule's first season. I just don't know how quickly they'll get that off the ground. But I also, you know, Minnesota feels like kind of a mystery team in the West this year as well. So yeah, I agree. It's a weird schedule. 5 away games in conference, right? I mean, that seem kind of rare.
I think it happens every other year.
Okay.
But to your point, in 2021, even though Michigan had almost the same record and was made to the playoffs, won the Big Ten, there were a lot more dogfights because there were more road games. Like, I think about the Nebraska game that year, Michigan State, obviously they lost the road. The Penn State game was not over until the very end. Whereas last season, Michigan was almost boringly good at times. I think this year there's potential. I guess we'll see. There's potential for more dogfight road games. Cause yeah, it technically happens every other year now in the 9-game conference schedule situation. But I do think this year, to your point, I think there are more what I would consider tough road venues. Cause I don't, when I hear, you know, road game at Rutgers or at Indiana or some of these venues, they're not the same.
Right.
And just because the crowd isn't going to be there, it's not going to be as electric. Like Nebraska, they sell out every game. They just had 92,000 fans at their volleyball game.
Very, very awesome.
Minnesota. Yes. Very cool. Minnesota, they'll probably fill it up, especially that time of year. Penn State obviously is going to be 108,000-110,000. And then Michigan State, always a passionate crowd too. So five road games is not technically rare, but I think having four strong venues that you have to go to, that's a little bit different than past seasons.
And we got to think that two of the three between Nebraska, Minnesota, and Michigan State will be at night, probably, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't remember the last time Michigan played at Minnesota during the day. Feels like at Minnesota is always a night game.
Yeah, 2020 and then 2015 were both night games.
So but to go back to the original point, I'm the other reason I'm going to stick with Minnesota. It's also the second game in a two game away swing as well. So again, maybe splitting hairs. Maybe Nebraska is better than we think. But again, those two teams play today would probably help at least give you a clearer picture. But I'm sticking with Minnesota. Penn State too good to be a trap game. Michigan State too big of a rival between Nebraska and Minnesota to me, and I'll go with Minnesota.
So I think my pick was technically Minnesota when we filled out the round table form, partly because in addition to everything you said, past few years, they've been really good at running the ball and stopping the run. Now, we'll see what they look like this year. Every year there's new players, but it does seem like they have an identity that kind of butts heads with Michigan, not dissimilar to Illinois last year. And I would argue, in retrospect, that was Michigan's biggest trap game, was the Illinois game, just because of the matchup, because of the physicality. So we'll see exactly what Minnesota looks like this year. That'd probably be my pick, but I am going to make a quick case for Nebraska. I think the thing that jumps out to me is it seems like in a lot of Michigan football's much hyped seasons, I think there's something to be said that first challenge. I think that first challenge tests you more than the previous games. And a lot of times it is a gut punch. Like, I think the most recent example maybe was, 2019, when Michigan was a preseason top 10 team. I think they played Army, right? That went to overtime. So I guess that was technically a test. They played Middle Tennessee, but it was really at Wisconsin. And suddenly they are just down by, 5 touchdowns at halftime? It was some ridiculous halftime score, because I think you can try to simulate it as best you can in fall camp. You can try, you know, to iron sharpen iron. You can say all the right things, but there's just something else about that first road game, that first kind of gut check against another good team. And Nebraska, I think my hierarchy currently of there, I think they're fourth in my atmosphere rankings, and they're always changing a little bit, but Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, probably the top three. But Nebraska, I mean, they're going to have over 90,000 fans. They sell out, they've sold out every game since what, the 60s. And it's a loud atmosphere. I think I saw a report that that's likely to be a 11 a.m. game. So it might not be the same as it was in 2021 in terms of the juice in the building, but it's still probably the second toughest venue Michigan's going to play at this year. On paper, I believe the third most talented team Michigan's going to face this year behind Ohio State and Penn State. I mean, for as down as they've been the past few years, I mean, they've still recruited at a top 25 level. They still have speed and size and strength at several positions. I'm kind of giving Matt Rhule a little bit of benefit of the doubt here, but I also think just that being the first road game, I think is going to test Michigan. So yeah, I'm with you. The winner of tonight is probably the biggest trap game on Michigan's schedule. All right, next topic. What is objectively going to be Michigan's toughest regular season game this year? And I think there's really only two candidates, Ohio State at home, Penn State on the road, which now that I just said it, I realize we forgot about Maryland. That arguably will be the trap game just from a staying focused, because it's between that Penn State and Ohio State game. It's on the road. Maryland did win 8 games last year. You know, they returned their quarterback, but back to this other debate. Toughest game on Michigan's schedule, which team or which matchup do you think is more likely for Michigan to lose against Penn State or against Ohio State?
I mean, this might really come down to one thing, is how good is Drew Aller. It's weird to not immediately say Ohio State, right? I mean, I think this would be the first time since I've been doing this that if you ask me preseason that the answer isn't immediately Ohio State. I mean, the thing about Penn State, always kind of, I know it's a little bit of a running joke on the board and maybe in general, the national pundits seem to love Penn State every year, no matter what. But this year, like, I think I'm buying in on Penn State more than normal. They're still a little, I think they've had a couple injuries on the interior of their defensive line, but they're very strong on the edge. They have studs basically at every level. Abdul Carter is going to be one of the best defenders, one of the best players in the Big Ten. Kalen King, the Cass Tech product, the one that Michigan really missed on, that would possibly be the guy that would put them over the top this season defensively. He looks like an All-American type first-round pick. And then guys like Chop Robinson up front, you know, and then offensively, we know what they have at running back with the two-headed monster, excuse me, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, and then they're always good at tight end. And I believe they brought in a transfer at wide receiver. His name escapes me, but I know they have a pretty solid transfer guy coming in. To me, it comes down to Drew Aller. I think the one benefit Michigan has, and granted, they don't play either of these teams till late in the season, but yeah, both first-year quarterbacks for Penn State and Ohio State this year. I don't know the last time that's happened for Michigan as far as playing both of them in the same season with first-year quarterbacks. Also, going with the away versus home type deal, I'm gonna go with Penn State. The night game thing has kind of been debunked, right? There's no real Penn State has not had like a major advantage in historically, right? Playing at night versus the game being at noon. So yeah, it's crazy to think. I would have to say at Penn State, mostly because it's on the road. But again, I just think, yeah, I don't know, Penn State.
Dante Cephas is the
that's
receiver
the guy.
Transfer
Sorry.
From Kent State. Yep. But I think you're right. I really do. I think the home road, I'm sure there's some stats that say the better team typically wins, but I've been to that Penn State Michigan matchup in State College 4 times, and every single time I come away just impressed, because it's not just big crowd, and it's not just everyone's into it, everyone's loud the whole game, but I think like just the way the stadium's designed is really well suited to create a hostile environment. You know, just the way it's stacked, the aluminum all over the bleachers. I mean, sometimes I'll do like a post game like video wrap up down on the field, and it's loud then, like it, everyone's cleared out, but it's just the echoing of the swirling winds and the aluminum, and then, you know, obviously the fan base is just really, really good at creating a tough atmosphere. So I don't think it's something Michigan can't handle. That's why you and I are predicting Michigan to go 12-0, but I'm a little bit more sold on Penn State's defense. Offensively, I'm more sold on Ohio State, but I think Penn State has the pieces to get it done better than last season. That's the part that I think Michigan fans struggle with, is Penn State's hyped as a top five team. Some national media types are putting them in the college football playoff over Michigan. And it's just hard after seeing last year's game to envision that Penn State could be that much better. But I do think that they're a little more well-rounded, a little deeper, bigger in the trenches. And then obviously having Aller, Singleton, Allen, you know, kind of not dissimilar to Michigan, really. I mean, you could maybe make an intriguing case that there are some parallels between Penn State this year and Michigan last year in terms of that young, extremely talented quarterback running back core is another year older, another year experience, getting more touches. So I could see the upset happening. I'm not predicting it, but I think that's the tougher game. And then I also constantly go back to, I think Michigan's current culture, current brand is really well equipped to beat Ohio State. I think Penn State in State College, I think, has that chance to, not a trap game, they're not sneaking up on anybody, but maybe with the playoff talk with Ohio State looming, you know, maybe Michigan's not doing a beat Penn State drill every day. I'll put it like that. So at least as of right now, a tougher matchup than Ohio State. We'll see what both teams can bring. All right, now let's get to some of the player talk. Your offensive and defensive MVPs for this season.
I almost feel like it's almost like a voting thing where I think Corum and Edwards almost kind of cancel each other out a little bit. So I'm going to go with JJ McCarthy. I think, you know, we talk about he had a good season last year, but as a player who still, there's a pretty sizable room for improvement for him. And I think Michigan's confident that he is making the right strides. It might really come down to receiver development, and I was just giving JJ the opportunity to make plays. Just because Court, like I said, Blake Donovan, like both are going to have like big seasons, I feel like. And it'd be, so it'd be very difficult to pick one of them. I'd still like, to be maybe controversial a little bit, if I was choosing between the two, I'd still almost say Edwards, just because of what he can, there's so many different ways he can hurt defenses. But I'm still going to go with JJ McCarthy. I think he's in line to have a pretty big season for Michigan.
I'm really tempted to like kind of dodge that debate and go with like Zach Zinter, because he might be like, in terms of positional value,
that's totally fair, dude.
Yeah, like he might be their first team All American. I'm gonna go with Corum. I think I know there's talk about more passing, although it is funny that like Michigan says we want to be 50-50, and like that's not that different than last season. But everyone's like, oh, they're going to open up the passing game. I think fans are just very excited about the potential there. I do kind of wonder if they're going to give Donovan Edwards more carries this year than last season when both running backs are healthy. Just one, because he's older, but two, because this was kind of supposed to be his Heisman season, right? Corum's was last year. Haskins was the year before. This year was supposed to be his year. So how do they make sure that he's not frustrated? And as you mentioned, they can put him out wide. They can put him in the slot. You know, they there's a lot of ways that he is a matchup nightmare. I'm just going to go with Corum because he's the reigning unanimous All-American. He's the reigning team MVP. I guess that's a safe pick. Defensively, I'm going to go with Chris Jenkins. I think there's a few candidates, right? Junior Colson, I think, is a prime candidate. I think Will Johnson, Rod Moore, two guys who are, I guess, working through injuries still, but two guys who I think have that kind of potential. But I think Chris Jenkins, at the end of the day, he's the head of the snake. You know, everyone I've talked to, they seem to think that he can have a Aiden Hutchinson like grip on this defense, where whenever he's on the field, you know, opponents are doing everything they can to stop him, and they still, and it still might not work. to me, the way he stops the run, we've talked about it ad nauseum at this point. I think the developments as a pass rusher, I am fascinated to see how he looks in terms of running and the leverage at 300 pounds. I know someone was asking me about it on a radio show earlier this week, and I kind of compared it to like a basketball player who's 6'2" and learns all these point guard moves, and then suddenly he grows 3 inches and can play on the wing too, but he still has those handles. I think it's a similar deal. Like, he learned all the moves and balance and leverage that he needed to know to be a successful 285-pound defensive tackle, and now he's 305. So as long as he kept his athleticism and quickness and all those traits, you know, I think he can really be the best defensive tackle in the country this fall. I mean, there's a few candidates. I'm not saying he's a lock, but I expect that kind of season for him. And so I think he'll be the defensive MVP. Steve, did you pick a defensive MVP?
First 3 games of the schedule are pretty soft. So, you know, whether how much he plays or not, I'm going to go with Will Johnson. I think Michigan needs All-American play at cornerback if they're going to accomplish their goals this season. And I think his ascension, his continued progression throughout last year, I mean, he looks like Michigan's best ball hawk at the position in quite a long time. Also, the other thing about him is, and you don't really ever you don't realize it too much when you're covering them in the recruiting angle, is always listening to Jim Harbaugh talk about how much of a true student of the game Will Johnson tends to be, the amount of work he puts in off the field. So, I mean, I just think he has star written all over him, and I think he lives up to it. I think I'm going to go with Will Johnson.
Okay, next up, top offensive and defensive freshman. Think we might have the same answers. I'm going Fred Moore on offense. I think this receiver room, in a way, it's a blessing in disguise that they had some guys banged up during fall camp, because I think it gave the freshmen more prime reps, first string reps. And Frederick Moore was a guy before fall camp that we were kind of hearing the most about. I know some players this fall have cited Carmelo English as someone who really impressed them. But yeah, I'm going to go with Frederick Moore as the star freshman on offense. On defense, I just wrote about him in fall camp risers. I'm going to go with Jair Hill. Just turned 18 today, and I think he's just very impressive at cornerback. He's got the speed, he's got the playmaking ability, he's got the ball skills. So I'm going to go with Jair Hill as the star defensive freshman. Steve, how about you?
Yeah, I think I have the same two picks. I any of those three of the three freshman receivers between English, Moore, and Morgan, I think could end up fitting the bill. Moore is the one that we heard the most about early. English just enrolled in the summer, so the fact that he's even being mentioned might speak to like a pretty quick ascension as well. But I have to stick with the one that I've been writing about the longest and the one I've heard the most consistently good things about, and that would be Fred Moore. And on the defense, yeah, I mean, it's almost Jair Hill by default due to the fact that he's probably the most likely to get an opportunity. You know, we did talk about the defensive line rotation, looking for like a fifth and sixth guy that maybe one of their young players could step up and take. But even then, you're talking about fifth or sixth. We're talking about Jair Hill in October, November. I mean, if he plays well enough and shows enough, he could be in contention for second, third corner. You know, Sainer still, they'll do wherever, they'll put him wherever. But, you know, Hill might be that guy. So almost by default, just because they're so deep defensively. But I'm going to go with Jair Hill. Deep sleeper there would be Brandon Hillman.
Yes.
Right, the safety. You know, they kind of swiped him from Notre Dame in the offseason. And a guy that I think in a lot of other years would probably be playing early. But, you know, you have a strong top two, obviously, with Moore and Page. And then we've talked a lot about Keon Sabb, Zeke Berry, and then Quentin Johnson also right in the mix. So Michigan quietly deeper at safety than they've been in a while. So, but just from a maybe a special team standpoint, a different angle, Brandon Hillman might be a sleeper in that respect.
Top tier athleticism, good physicality. I think the excitement that there is for Brandon Hillman internally, it's similar to what Rod Moore had in 2021, where it's like, oh yeah, we got we got a gem here. And he was highly rated. It's not like he was, he wasn't rated as low as Rod Moore. But at the same time, I could envision a scenario where he ascends up the depth chart or his snap count increases as the season wears on. And he continues to kind of build that trust, build that comfort in Michigan's defense. All right.
On that note, real quick about Brandon Hillman, you mentioned him being more highly ranked and regarded than Rod Moore. Was still only an 88 in December of 22. So he was a late riser in the rankings. And sometimes we've seen historically, sometimes those are the guys that they don't end up rising enough before signing day. Like a big
Mason
rise.
Graham.
Is in,
yeah.
Yes. You know, there are guys that do rise. Even Aiden, when he was in high school, was highly ranked to begin. And then I don't know if you remember, but he kind of fell back a little bit and then had a huge week for the Army All-American game and moved back up. You know, so that's another thing with Hillman where I think the composite or 24/7, we had him at 132nd to end the cycle. Very conceivable he's maybe better than that, honestly. Just history says guys that rise that late in the process, it's almost like a, oh crap, this guy's good. Like we got to bump him up somewhere. We got to put him somewhere. But you're not going to bump a guy from 88 to 5-star in December, January, right? So that's something to kind of keep in mind with Hillman specifically.
Absolutely. All right, next one, breakout / most improved on offense and defense. I guess technically breakout and most improved can be two different things. But I'm thinking players who will play a substantially bigger role than last season and succeed in those roles. So for me, my defensive choice is Derek Moore. I mean, he played a decent amount last year, but didn't have sacks in any of Michigan's big games, but you saw the snap count start to rise. I think this is a year where he, not to spoil it, but he's my predicted leader in sacks this season. And so I think he's going to play a really substantial role, really shine on Michigan's defense. On offense, he technically counts because he only had 11 catches last season. And through 9 games, I think he only had 5 or so. But I'm going to go with Colson Loveland at tight end. Keep hearing, I mean, Michigan's coaches talk about him like this is similar to Aiden Hutchinson. They talk about him like he's already a star, even though he's only a rising sophomore and didn't actually play a ton in the first half of last season. But, you know, his catching ability, whether it's in traffic, whether it's getting open, high pointing passes, you know, keeping his feet underneath him to come down with the ball, that Michigan's really enamored with his pass catching ability. So maybe that's a cop out because he's already being talked about as if he's arrived. So would he count as a breakout? But from a snap count starts in his career standpoint, I think he could still count. Steve, offensive and defensive breakout / most improved players.
You took my defensive one for sure. I'll just go on the other side, though, and say Braden McGregor, similar situation, kind of his time to shine. I think he's ready. I've mentioned consistently, I think the thing with Derek Moore, I just think there's a bit of a higher ceiling there, which doesn't mean like McGregor still has a chance to be an all-conference type player. I feel like, especially, you know, we talk about how strong Michigan should be on the interior. Both of those guys should get ample opportunity. I think they take advantage. So I'll go with Braden McGregor. Offensively, that's a tougher one without Colson Loveland. I guess Tyler Morris would probably be a solid choice there. Another guy who, you know, kind of quietly saw a decent amount of snaps near the end of last season. Didn't show a ton in the box score, but we know that Michigan, very, very high on what he brings to the table. Isn't he fighting? He's fighting through something too, isn't he? If I remember correctly, didn't.
Yeah, I don't know his status. But he was the second half of fall camp. Yeah, he was battling something. Working right. Through something.
Yeah, that's the phrase. But seemed to have a stranglehold on that third receiver spot. Talked a lot about his rapport with McCarthy being an advantage for him there. So I'll go with Tyler Morris as a breakout most improved.
Okay, next up, thinking about statistics, offense leaders in rushing yards and receiving yards. So rushing yards, it's, I assume, Corum versus Edwards. I'm going to go with Blake Corum. I'm with you. I think that there's a very realistic scenario where Donovan Edwards leads the way just because that home run ability, the big play ability. But I'm going to go with Blake Corum, just educated guess, I suppose. I don't want to overthink it. He was the leader last year, and he's back. So I'm going to pick him. Receiver, a little trickier, but the buzz from fall camp seemed like, and obviously he changed his jersey number to number one, feels like Roman Wilson kind of asserted himself very well in fall camp. Not necessarily a huge shock. I think we even said before fall camp that we expected him to be to kind of emerge as the number one receiver. But I'm going to go with Roman Wilson as Michigan's leading receiver. Steve, leading rusher and receiver in your eyes?
I have to go with the same, right? Corum, definitely more your bell cow back. We talked about Donovan's versatility. I think that gives Corum the inside track to be the leading rusher. And yeah, it's almost got to be between, we did mention a few podcasts ago that Edwards could possibly be in the running if they threw him the ball enough to lead in receiving yards. But I'll also go with Roman Wilson, not writing off Cornelius Johnson at all. But yeah, I mean, Roman Wilson, the other thing too, unless I'm totally, but I feel like he's like totally 100% healthy and has been for an extended amount of time now. And so, you know, I think that's another thing for him that'll be big. So I mean, Johnson's good at moving the sticks though, too. And you can't really put value on enough value on that, you know, as well. But just game to game basis, I think Roman Wilson has a few really big games and ends as the leading receiver.
I think one thing that will help him is I think Cornelius Johnson's valuable as well, but I think Roman Wilson can really excel in every route in the route tree. You know, I think his ability to play out of the slot, his ability to play out wide, I think he's just, I guess, similar to Ronnie Bell in that he can make those kind of plays all over the field and that he can do every route and Michigan can kind of line him up anywhere and he can still make those plays. All right, next up, on the defensive side, leaders in tackles, sacks, and interceptions. I feel like tackles, probably pretty easy. Junior Colson, I'm predicting him. For those that listened to the linebacker episode, you'll remember that I predicted him to set the Harbaugh era record in tackles. I think Ben Gideon has it with 107 in a season. I expect Junior Colson to potentially break that. Sacks, I think I went with Derek Moore. Mentioned it just a moment ago. Don't need to elaborate that much more. Interceptions. I think before the season or before fall camp, I was thinking Rod Moore because he had four last season. I'm going to go with maybe a little bit of a wild card. Maybe I'm proven wrong here, but I just think Mike Sainristil still has a very good chance because I feel like teams might try to avoid throwing to Will Johnson a ton. I think safeties, there's always a chance, right? And Rod Moore did have four last season. I think they're often thrown to a little less. I think Sainristil still in that nickel spot, and maybe he plays some snaps at corner as well. But I think he's going to be someone that's going to be thrown to a lot. And then he's also a former wide receiver. So he's not going to drop interceptions that are kind of in his hands as much. You know, I don't know. It's not a pick that I'm like putting tons of chips in on, but it's one that I think in a stat that's often kind of random or based on how often you get thrown at, I think there's a chance Mike Sainristil leads Michigan interceptions this year. So Steve, tackles, sacks, and interceptions. Who do you have leading the Wolverines in those three categories?
Junior Colson and Derek Moore for the reasons you mentioned. Interceptions, I'm still going to go with Will Johnson. I do think, yeah, there's a few different guys. And Makari Page played well in coverage last year as well. Could be another possibility there. So, but I agree. I, as far as probably going to be a cornerback, you would think. And I do agree that maybe Johnson doesn't get thrown to as often on a game-to-game basis, but I still think he comes up with enough, especially if the leader last year was four, feel like a full season schedule or whether he sits a game or two or whatever. I think he gets there.
Yeah, he's got a bigger catch radius. Him and Makari Page would be the, you know, if you're thinking like who will statistically have their hands on the most passes, it probably is them. So like those picks. All right. Last one. We both pick as of today, pick Michigan to go 12-0. Steve, what happens in the college football playoff? I mean, we don't know who's in. We don't know the seedings. We know one of the playoff games will be the Rose Bowl. The other one will be the Sugar Bowl. If Michigan wins the Big Ten, I would assume that they would try everything in their power as a one or two seed to play in the Rose Bowl. Does this team win a national championship this season?
I mean, million-dollar question. Seems like kind of a weird year for college football. So you have all, what, of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, all have new quarterbacks. Penn State even perennial or not, well, kind of a perennial top 10-ish team. Also with a new quarterback. Tennessee's got a new starting quarterback. They're in the top 10, new starting quarterback. I mean, it's just Michigan has a lot of national championship trademarks in their favor. You know, very veteran team, second-year starter at quarterback. I'll just say yes. I mean, what? It's not like I'm going to get in trouble if I'm wrong here. I just think there's enough advantages there for them to run. I mean, many more advantages this year for them to run the table than there were last year. You know, I think seeing some, not indecision. I mean, Ryan Day knows a good quarterback when he sees one, but just not seeing anybody sort of seize that starting quarterback job, I think just feels like it's a positive for Michigan. And then we'll see with Georgia. I mean, Georgia's always got probably more pure talent than anybody across the field from them. But Ohio State should have beat Georgia last year. We, in a weird way, could easily be talking about Michigan winning the last two against Ohio State, but Ohio State winning the national championship last year. So I'll go with Michigan. I think if there was a year for them to do it, it'd be this year. I think a lot of things set up, a lot of the things outside of their control set up in their favor, but a lot of things within their control sort of set up in their favor as well. So I think they do enough. I think they get it done. I guess it's August 31st. What the hell? Who cares?
The stars definitely aligned in a lot of ways for Michigan, not just in returning players. I mean, how often is Michigan going to have three players with top 100 NFL draft grades come back? And Blake Corum, Chris Jenkins, Zach Zinter. There were other players that came back as well for fifth seasons that they arguably didn't need in terms of their pro careers. So yeah, it's a very experienced team internally, and then externally, you're seeing not just new starting quarterbacks, but different teams having pretty much every team in the country has more question marks than Michigan. There are teams that might be better than Michigan this year, but in terms of on paper question marks, Michigan really doesn't have that many. I mean, how much time have we spent this summer talking about that third cornerback spot or the kick return spot? It's like, okay, if those are your biggest problems, in pretty good shape. So I'm very confident Michigan will make the college football playoff. I am not as confident in them necessarily winning the national championship this season. There's a lot of reasons they can, but I'm going to be that guy. I think the overall cumulative odds that one of the more talented teams in the country, right, because they're 14th in team talent composite, the odds that an Alabama or Georgia or Clemson or whoever hit the lotto with the quarterback and then the rest of their highly talented team wins the national championship. I mean, if you look at the last decade or so of college football, that does seem to be the formula. Be top five in team talent composite or have, you know, a generational Heisman caliber quarterback, which Michigan might have. And that would, if we're 6 weeks in and JJ McCarthy looks like a top four or five quarterback in the country, I think I would say Michigan is on track to win a national championship. So between not quite knowing the next step for Michigan's offense, and then also just kind of seeing history and assuming, I mean, there's a lot of first year.
You're taking the house.
Yeah. Yeah. That's taking fair. The field. Yeah. Just cause I mean, a lot of first year starting quarterbacks have won national championships or played in national championship games lately. So yeah, I'm taking the aggregate field, but I want to
be Georgia. Who do you think though, Zach? If do you think it's Georgia again? Because it just doesn't. It seem like Bama's quarterback situation seems like kind of a mess.
I think Alabama and Ohio State have not stored confidence or not given me a lot of confidence with the rumors about their quarterback Yeah, I always wonder though with like Alabama, like is that just like the entire country's like subtly rooting for their downfall or
Could
something?
be,
Like
could
it's just
be.
kind of like this is
Sure.
the year. I mean, how many times have we heard like this is the year where Saban's dynasty, erodes or whatever? Like
Sure.
I do agree with you though.
I just think
I can't put a particular team. I would probably pick Georgia.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
He was pretty decisive in announcing Beck as the starter. I mean, or at least it felt like it was pretty early, considering how much talent they have at the position. I just, feel like, and they
one
don't
thing
feel
I'll
like
give
it.
Georgia credit
Yeah.
for, they've won two national titles with Stetson Bennett as their quarterback. It's not like
Okay,
they Ohio
but
State, Alabama needed, Justin Fields, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Mac Jones. I mean,
isn't Stetson Bennett made the Rams roster though, didn't he?
He did.
I mean,
I just mean like
he's no scrub. I feel like he's almost kind of slept on at this point. Is that like I think he's backing Stafford up.
Yes,
in
he
LA.
is.
So,
but
but
I guess my
I get
bigger
your point though.
point,
Like Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson. Yeah, I get it. I mean, I'm with you.
Georgia can win without hitting the lottery at
Yes,
quarterback. They
that's
just
what I
need
was
a
going to
very
say.
good
Yes.
quarterback, which you could argue Michigan isn't too far from that situation as well.
They might be the most similar to Georgia in that regard, honestly, that there's enough, particularly defensively, there's enough depth and talent there for them to, be able to win. They can score when they need to, but they're also not, they're not. I mean, I know Georgia put up, 64 against TCU, but or 65 or whatever, but they're not a flashy run and gun type deal. You know, it is much more of your sort of your traditional football. You know, no less mistakes in the opponent, run the football, win the trench on both sides, with a few big plays from your skill positions. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's Georgia if it's not Michigan right now, honestly, unless, one way I think it could change is like, I don't know. I think from reading Ohio State stuff, it felt like a lot of their fans thought that Devin Brown gives them a higher ceiling at quarterback. I mean, maybe he eventually.
McCord is a five-star guy. That's
Yeah, it was
probably
weird. It's
another podcast for another day, but like
compared to it was McCarthy or McCord, and I mean, if we're being totally dead honest, Ohio State kind of chose McCord over McCarthy. I mean, they could have easily gotten JJ McCarthy if they hadn't taken a commitment from McCord when he wanted in. That being said, you would think that he would seize the job when it was his opportunity though as well, but maybe both guys are just maybe they're in a good position there. Maybe it's both guys are just really good and they had a hard time choosing, but it didn't necessarily come off that way watching them in their spring game. And then also just the reports and stuff didn't really, so interesting stuff.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this college football season. I'm excited for every college football season, but I feel like there's a little bit more openness and intrigue. Cause you mentioned the three, I guess, teams that recruited a super high level have some mystery, and then you have interesting wild card teams like a USC or Texas who have these great quarterbacks. And is that the equalizer? They have the quarterback. These other teams have maybe more well-rounded rosters overall. And then there's Michigan, who returns so much. I think nationally they're still kind of viewed as a scrappy team because they are 14th in the team talent composite, but at the same time there's a lot of NFL talent at every position for the Wolverines. So y'all have a story tomorrow on three reasons Michigan can win the national title, three reasons that might trip them up. But I think today I'm taking the field. All right, we're going to hit a quick break on the other side. We'll look a little bit at this Michigan-ECU matchup and what we think would count as a successful weekend for Michigan on offense and defense. Players are watching a little closer than usual. Score predictions. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And
sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
So, Steve, I'm going through like the East Carolina preview stuff now. This is a lot tougher than it used to be with the transfer portal. It's very tough to like figure out which outgoing transfer, incoming transfer, it's going to be, you know, this or that. It's very hard to predict exactly what's going to happen in these games. So let's focus a little bit more on Michigan because they are favored to win. East Carolina went 8-5 last year, but they lose a lot of their top, especially on offense, top players. So what would count as a successful weekend for Michigan on offense tomorrow? What's something that, you know, other than winning, right, and scoring a lot of points, like what's something that you think would have you maybe increase your confidence level in this offense a little bit?
I guess to me, I think it's pretty easy. And then can we also just say, like, we don't need to mention like staying healthy, because that should go without saying as well, besides like scoring a lot of points, like staying healthy.
Winning and staying healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to make those like your big point. I think seeing some of the younger guys at receiver make some plays or at least get them involved. Right. I mean, we're talking about what this offense might need to take another step forward. I think the more playmakers you have at receiver, where you do have your two sort of stalwarts at the top of the depth chart, you need more than two, or you want more than two receivers to be able to make plays when asked. So I think seeing some of the younger guys come in and make an impact early would go a long ways. Because again, they're going to have a quarterback that can get the ball to them. They should have an offensive line that is going to give that quarterback enough time to throw them the ball. And they should have a running game that should be able to keep the rest of the defense honest. There's really, it'd be hard to imagine that some of these guys won't have opportunities, right? So who takes advantage? Who does, you know, of those guys? And we can include a lot of those other guys, you know, like a Clemens, Carmelo English, Samaj Morgan, and Fred Moore, those guys, like who steps up, who makes a play? Because again, I think that would just, it might ease some, and if they do make plays, it doesn't mean it eases concern for the rest of the season. But a lot of times, I don't know if you'd agree here, Zach, I've always felt like you can just kind of tell when a guy belongs, even if they're even in a game like Saturday's, you know, Michigan heavily favored, like you can just tell that when a guy belongs, you know. So let's see if Michigan has a young guy that immediately belongs. Not saying if they don't show it right away, they don't belong, but you know, guys that can walk out on the field and just look like they're ready to play at the college level. I'm just interested to see if Michigan has that with some of these young guys at receiver.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. I think the more intriguing storylines will probably be in the pass game. One thing I'm looking for in determining if Michigan had a successful weekend, I think the passing game, I want to see some verticality with it. I know it's not the same as it would be against a Penn State or Ohio State, but the sooner Michigan really starts clicking on those downfield passes, and even if it's against group of five competition, I think the better. You know, last year, it's pretty well documented at this point, they were missing and missing and missing on those deep passes. And then toward the end, that they got them, which was important, because I don't know if they win a Big Ten title if they don't have some of those over-the-top passes against Ohio State. Who knows? But regardless, I think it started to click toward the end. It would behoove Michigan to have those plays start clicking early. So I think, you know, I'm not super concerned with the run game. I am fascinated about the number three running back battle. But to me, I think vertical passes from J.J. McCarthy connecting and looking crisp, right? There's the passes that are hit because the guy's so wide open, you can kind of tell. Then there's the one where you're catching Cornelius Johnson or Roman Wilson in stride, and the throw looks good. And if Michigan can have that ready to rock by the time they go on those road games that we mentioned as trap games, they look even less like potential trap games, in my opinion. Second thing I'm very fascinated about, I'm sure Michigan is hoping that this is not a super relevant position battle, but of all the position battles, Steve, you know, I did my story kind of breaking down where they all stand after fall camp. The one I had the least info on was the second number two quarterback battle. I think Davis Warren is probably the favorite, Jack Tuttle, and then everyone's really fascinated by Alex Orji's fall camp, largely because he's in the running as kick returner, but I you know, it sounds like he's making plays at quarterback too. So I think seeing those three, seeing if there's someone Michigan can trust or lean on for a drive or two here and there, right? Obviously it's a different situation if one of them is starting the game, but you know, if later on in the season McCarthy takes a tough hit and needs a few plays off, you probably want to know entering Big Ten play who that player is going to be. All right, on defense, what are you looking for weekend? What would make a successful weekend for the defense in your eyes?
I guess this early in this, I just always go back to the well with like which young guys kind of step up, right? It sounds like both, maybe all three, I guess he's not young, but all three of Quentin Johnson, Keon Sab, Zeke Berry might see ample time on Saturday. So very interested to see what those guys bring to the table. Interested to see what Ernest Hausman brings at the linebacker position. Some of the young edge guys, like I always listen for like those fourth or fifth, like a TJ guy, you know, does he come in and make an impact in a game where he's probably going to get a solid amount of run? And then, I mean, geez, let's get weird and wonder, like, is Reese Atterbury really going to potentially be a depth piece on the defensive line? You know, just stuff like that. Cause I think Michigan's, they're veteran enough, they're talented enough. You can kind of count on a lot of these guys in certain instances. I guess, I mean, if Will Johnson's not at full strength or if they maybe sit him, you also want to see what they have at corner, right? Like, how does Jaden McBurrows look? How's Josh Wallace look as a transfer piece? Jalen Harrell, I guess, would be one that I'd be watching as far from a pass rush standpoint, because you know he's going to play a lot because he knows how to stop the run. So, you know, he's another guy that I think is kind of intriguing because there's room for improvement there with his pass rush ability. Do we see some of that on Saturday? You know, do we see some visible improvement from him in that area? So more stuff to look at, I think, defensively. But a lot of it really is, to me, is like depth stuff, young guys, and not primary position battle type stuff.
Yeah, for me, it's all about the pass rush. I think that's what Michigan knows how important it is, especially from the interior. I think they made five defensive tackles available this fall camp, and every single one of them spoke for minutes at a time about the pass rush. So clearly, it's a major point of emphasis. I think that position group knows that's the difference between being a great defensive line and an elite defensive line. Doesn't have to be sacks, but pressures, dissolving the pocket, making the quarterback, you know, kind of think on their feet a little bit. The edge rotation obviously is a part of that too, and trying to figure out, you know, who stands out or who's really coming to play. Although I will say, you know, Jalen Harrell, He had 8 quarterback pressures against Colorado State last year. So I think some of it we won't know until we see, you know, what East Carolina's pass protection looks like, or, you know, kind of how the season progresses. But yeah, seeing how he and Josiah Stewart look, seeing how Derek Moore and Braden McGregor look, guys who had a lot of pressures last season, not a lot of sacks last season. So I think there is something to be said for honing in on that closing ability. Bring up a good point about the cornerbacks. I know that's, it's low hanging fruit enough that I was like ignoring it. But if you think about it, Josh Wallace has not played at Michigan. Jaden McBurrows did not play last season. Jair Hill did not play at Michigan last season. You know, there's Keyshawn Harris and Miles Pollard and all these other guys. Amarian Walker, if he plays, I don't know everyone's status. But there's just not a lot of snaps in the maize and blue at cornerback if you're taking out Will Johnson and Mike Sainer still. So, yeah, seeing who looks, as you said, like they belong. Don't have to be perfect. Also don't have to, you know, have 3 pass breakups and an interception necessarily. But yeah, who looks like they will be factors for Michigan throughout this season. I'm sure Michigan's coaches are trying to figure that out. All right, Steve, any players that you're watching closely other than, well, maybe we've mentioned a couple of them, but any players you're watching particularly closely for the Wolverines?
Not a specific player, but I'm just as interested as probably everyone else, because they're so tight-lipped, is the kick and punt return situation. You know, who emerges, right? I guess that's what I'm most interested to see. Otherwise, besides that, and again, not necessarily because it remains to be seen, but, you know, like a Ben Hall or Kalel Mullings situation at running back. You know, who's that third guy? Because, again, Michigan should be in control tomorrow. There's no reason to run your big dogs into the ground in game one. So that'll be another sort of player slash situation I'll be keeping an eye on. But more so, yeah, like maybe like an Amon Dennis. Does he get one of those spots? I just kind of have a hunch he will. I could be wrong, but the special team stuff is always most interesting to me.
Yeah, I think somewhat related to that. I'm just curious to see Kalel Mullings. You know, it sounds like there's been pretty team seems pretty encouraged by what he brought as the number 3 running back this fall camp. And I know he said on Monday he wants to be the guy that to drop the hammer down, you know, when he's got the ball in his hands. So
he really is
how he has grown.
He really is by far the best compliment to the two they have, though. Don't you think? Don't you agree? I mean, it feels like,
yes,
if he takes that job and can seize it, that's really almost a best case scenario for Michigan. Like, it is. It's not maybe. It is a best case scenario of upperclassman vet, and just provides a different dynamic than the other two provide.
Yep. And you know, obviously the intangible stuff. Leader, has worked really hard, has been through a lot in his career. I mean, it could be kind of like a Mike Barrett effect on the defense's culture. You know, he was someone that had to wait his turn, but he got his turn. He seized his opportunity. Plus, yeah, on field, he's 6'2", 237. If he's that big and fast enough that he's in the running at kick and punt return, and he has that physicality, and he maybe learns some of the nuances, like waiting for the hole to develop or running a little bit lower. I mean, he's, yeah, big X factor in that position. Freshman receivers, I'm also keeping an eye on. I think one other player, I mean, just because we haven't really talked about him a ton in this episode, but Jaden Hood, to rise from 7th on the linebacker depth chart last year to 4th without anyone leaving, that fascinates me. That makes me think that Michigan really thinks that he can be, you know, a future starter for the Wolverines. So we talked about him a little bit more in the linebacker preview episode, but he's a player. He's someone like, maybe when the ball is somewhere else, I'm looking to see, like, how does he pursue? How does he cover? How does he engage in a pass rushing situation? You know, what's his tackling look like? So he's someone I'll be watching too, because I think if he's a hit, you know, we talked about the safety room suddenly looks a little deeper than maybe we thought before fall camp. I think it's the same deal with the linebacker room. If he's a hit and Michigan has, you know, 4 linebackers that they feel really good about, that's very promising for the depth of Michigan's and versatility of Michigan's defense this season. All right, Steve, finally, as I said a moment ago, this game is tougher to preview than like the Big Ten ones. Well, the Big Ten games, I'll probably have some good stats. I'll have a good sense of, you know, the depth chart and the roster for both teams. But score prediction for Michigan versus East Carolina.
I say Michigan 40, East Carolina 12.
40 to 12?
Yep.
He's got something
and,
right.
And I mentioned before we got on, if you're betting on this game, don't make your bet based off of what I'm predicting. I don't need that responsibility. So I like to choose
goofy
scores.
You put that on me, Ricky Bobby. Yeah,
kind of. I mean, it's just that's big. You know, I don't know. Like, people are weird when it comes to, well, weird and defensive when it comes to betting. Like, I know they're putting faith in us. Mine's always just more of a general score prediction. I don't think Michigan quite covers. I do think it could be a situation, maybe junk time, maybe ECU scores a late touchdown or something. But I'm gonna say Michigan 40, East Carolina 12.
Okay. I think we're similar in terms of margin. I'm saying Michigan 49, East Carolina 10. I don't know. We kind of had said the same thing last year, right? We're just kind of throwing numbers out there because it's hard to tell with blowouts or potentially lopsided wins. You know, when does Michigan stop pushing the pace, trying to score? You know, how much does a group of five team, you know, keep trying to make it a game? You know, what kind of game plan do both teams have in that third and fourth quarter? But yeah, I think Michigan will score fairly easily. Wouldn't be surprised if the defense, especially if there's some injuries, wouldn't be surprised if the defense has a few big plays that they give up. But ultimately, I expect Michigan to win pretty handily. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you Saturday night for the post-game episode. Enjoy it, Michigan fans. It's been a long off season. I know fans are as excited as they've ever been for Michigan football. And in just a matter of days or hours, depending on when you're listening, the Wolverines will kick off their 2023 season. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. See you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.